The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
It remains to me now, the 12th Bishop of the Diocese of Green Bay, to declare with moral certainty and in accord with the norms of the Church that the events, apparitions, and locutions given to Adele Bryce in October of 1859 do exhibit the substance of supernatural character, and I do hereby approve these apparitions as worthy of belief. David L. Ricken, 12th Bishop of the Diocese of Green Bay. Let's thank the Blessed Mother.
Ladies and gentlemen, that was a historic moment in our country, the first approved apparition for the United States of America.
It's the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Well, hey, thanks for joining me. That was a historic moment in our country, the only church-approved apparition. Champion, Wisconsin, Father Rocky and I were there as Bishop David Ricken, the 12th Bishop of the Diocese of Green Bay, made that official proclamation. And I'm here today to talk to you about a huge development coming from the Vatican, something that's getting a lot of buzz. We're diving into an update from the Vatican that's changing the way that we're going to view Marian apparitions and other spiritual phenomena. Just hours ago, the Vatican introduced a new expedited procedure for vetting these alleged apparitions and deciding that these phenomena will no longer be labeled as supernatural. Instead, the Vatican's going to now state that nothing stands in the way of encouraging devotion, and there's a whole criteria for evaluating these. And I've invited Father Rocky to join me today. He is our chief executive officer here. He also hosts the Family Rosary Across America. I know you tune into him every evening. You can do that at 7 p.m. Central. And he's gone through the document. He's been doing a lot of media throughout the day. And he's here just to give us some insight into what the church is saying and how this will affect future visions as well as things that have gone before us. Father, good afternoon.
Hey, good afternoon, Drew, and kudos to your team to be able to pull up that sound bite from the year 2010, December 8th, when the Bishop of Green Bay formally approved the apparition of Our Lady of Champion, which you call the only approved apparition in the United States of America and Canada. That may never happen again, given this document. Now, popes can change things, but I think this new document is very timely and very welcome. It's really quite brilliant. I've been reading through it all day long. I just got off News Nation TV talking about it. So basically what's going on here is the church is saying in the future, the church will no longer render a judgment that something is of supernatural origin and therefore worthy to be believed. At best, the church will give a qualification called nihil obstat. That's for Latin, which means nothing is in the way, or there's no problem if you want to believe it. All right, but the church isn't going to say this is supernatural. So in the past, basically, with any of these apparitions or supernatural phenomena, after an exhaustive review of it, the local bishop, and perhaps with the support of the Vatican, would render one of three judgments. I'm kind of simplifying it here, sure. But it's basically the judgment is, it looks like it's true. You ought to believe it. Or second, we're not so sure. Or third, no, definitely not. This is not true because it contradicts what the church teaches, right? Now it's more nuanced. There are six different levels of it. And it'll be interesting to see how this plays out over time. And I would say the highest level is what we would call the nihil obstat. The local bishop and his committee of a canon lawyer and a theologian and another expert have reviewed it. And there's nothing in the way to say that, yeah, this is true and it's worth believing, right? The bottom level, the sixth level is, you know, stay away from it. So basically the church, we're interested in truth. And every human being should be interested in truth. They want to know, is it true or is it false? Yep. Like if you say Jesus rose from the dead, well, that's quite an amazing statement. What do you mean a person raised from the dead? Hey, look, I didn't see it myself, but 11 of the apostles did, and we have written evidence that 500 other people did, and they went to their death as martyrs believing that, and that's kind of credible. Now, there'd be other reasons people might believe in that. And so, you know, someone claims Our Blessed Mother appeared to Juan Diego in the year 1531 on December 9th and left her image on a tilma, which is in that basilica, and there's no scientific explanation for it. And the church, after exhaustive research, will say, you know, there's nothing wrong with believing that. Right? So that's kind of the way it's going to first. So we don't know, is it true, is it false, is it real, or is it unreal, is it believable, or is it unbelievable? So I've been working through the document all day long. Yeah. It's been released in many languages, English, Spanish, Italian, French, German, Polish. I haven't seen the Latin version yet, but it's very balanced. And I did a word search on it.
Yeah.
And for the most part, it does not mention, even in the footnotes, any of the apparition sites that people are familiar with, such as Guadalupe or Lourdes or Champion or Garabandal or Medjugorje or Nisida or Bayside or Quebejo or Akita. But I did find one footnote that mentioned Fatima, which is interesting. Hmm. That's quite
what did it say?
You know, I didn't read the whole thing. I just did a word search.
So this won't have any impact, right, Father, on previous apparitions?
Who
such
knows?
As Fatima, Guadalupe, places
who
like that?
Who knows?
Interesting.
Who knows? You know, we have to see how it plays out. Ultimately, there's what's called in the church a census fidelium, kind of the sense of the faithful. And we see this going on right now. You've seen it.
Yeah.
At the Shrine of Our Lady of Champion in Wisconsin. For the most part, it was unknown to most of the world for 150 years until the local bishop formally approved it. And then the word began to spread. And people asked me the day the bishop approved that apparition, what do you think will happen now? I said, well, you know, there's 2 million Chicagoans who go to Door County every summer. They're going to hear about this on Relevant Radio. There's going to be more people who come to visit. They'll pray. They'll light a candle. Candles are $5. They have a profit margin. They'll probably have some extra money. They'll probably put some bathrooms in. And they did, right? So what else is going to happen? Well, maybe a little more money and put in a parking lot, right? Yeah. And now we see over time that it's growing organically. And I remember the first time I heard about that apparition when I started working at Relevant Radio in September 2009. Somebody up in Green Bay said, hey, Father, did you hear a lady appeared in the woods out here? Well, I tend to be skeptical. I mean, I love the Blessed Mother, and I believe in miracles. I believe in the Lord, but I tend to be skeptical, right? So I was, I think I was respectful. I said, no kidding. That's really amazing. But I didn't commit. But then I kind of, my eyes open, my ear open, and I got to know the fellow who is both the chancellor of the diocese and the rector of that shrine, Father John Durfler, who is now the Bishop of Marquette, Michigan, Bishop Durfler, who I consider the world's most prudent man.
That's
and
so
I think, of, well, yeah, I really do. You've met him before. I said, the world's most prudent man. Well, he's out there. Well, maybe there's something to this, yeah. Right? So we drove out there in May of 2010 to pray the rosary, and there's this really kind of nondescript shrine, 6 acres wedged in between two active dairy farms. We parked our car. There weren't many people there. There weren't any stars in the skies. There weren't any rainbows. There wasn't anything different happening. We walked in to the church, and you just had a great sense of peace, right? Quiet. And the first thing I noticed is the floor was absolutely clean and sparkling. Maybe there were one or two people in there. And I noticed the tabernacle's in the center. It's nothing special, but they were taking good care of it with a little veil in front of it. And it was shiny. And the art, you know, it's not going to win any award. All right. Just like, you know, this came from the people. And there's a confessional back there. And I just had the sense, I think this thing's real. I think this thing's real. And I went downstairs to where evidently the apparition took place. And again, it's not going to win an award for art, but that's what makes it so real to me, right? Yeah. And we've been there many times since. Yeah. So after the bishop approved it, I was at that men's conference in Green Bay a couple months later. I said, hey guys, I'm going to do something you're not supposed to do. Now I've got their attention. I said, I've got an idea and I'm not taking responsibility for it. That is, somebody should every year in the month of May, organize a walking pilgrimage from the headquarters of Relevant Radio in Green Bay all the way out to the Shrine of Our Lady of Champion. Used to call her Live Good Help. And I said, that's what they do in Catholic countries like Portugal to Fatima, or Italy to Loreto, or Poland to Czechoslovakia, or Mexico to Our Lady of Guadalupe. And I thought that was the last I'd ever hear of it. But it fell in the heart of two great men up there, Tom Schmidt, Pat Dupre. You know the history. And they organized a walking pilgrimage. And it's all volunteer, right? All volunteer. That first year, 300 people came. And now 10 years later, they needed 300 volunteers for the 6,000 people who came. And you know that people are going because the word is spreading. Prayers are answered. How many women who didn't think they could have a baby went and did that walk to Mary, and 12 months later, they have a baby. We must have 24 of those testimonials. And so the word is spreading. There's nothing strange going out there. You're not going to see any, you know, sun dance in the sky or anything like that. But there's something about it, and there's something about walking 21 miles. And I'll bet if this is categorized, we categorize Nihilopsa. Nobody's making any money out there. There's no hotels.
Yeah.
There's no restaurants. Okay, there are hotels and restaurants in Green Bay, but they also serve the football industry and other industry, right? Nobody's made, I mean, yeah, they got a gift shop out there, but, you know, gift shop, you're lucky if it breaks even, right? they barely have toilets out there, right? And that's why I think it's real, all right? So there's a not-for-profit organization called the Walk to Mary. I think there's, I don't know, 5 or 6 or 7 of us on the board. We meet once a year for 90 minutes. Nobody gets paid. When Rebel Radio promotes it, we do it for free. I don't want to be paid because this is real, and nobody's making any money on it. And so they charge $25 to, you know, pay for, I don't know, the porta potties and the food and the drinks and medical and all that. And if there's any money left over, it's donated to the local Catholic school. So there's absolutely no controversy out there, which is good. You know, it's real. So I think this is really quite fascinating. So here's another thing that's going on with this new document.
Sure.
And that is that given the information age we live in, where information can travel at the speed of light to 7.2 billion people in the world, if something happens locally, which is a phenomenal event, everybody in the world knows about it in an instant, right? The word spreads. And so it's no longer just up to the local bishop to assess the veracity or the character of the supernatural phenomenon, but he has to work in union with the dicastery of doctrine in Rome. And that makes a lot of sense. And so I've been reading through the document. This will allow them to get to a much quicker judgment on these things and take away the guesswork. And I kind of look forward to how this is going to be put into effect.
There was a total of 6, right? Prudential conclusions that can be given,
right,
to these alleged apparitions. Mm-hmm. What are the other ones? They took away supernatural origin, right?
So they're never going. They're not going to say that. They're going to say nihil obstat, that's Latin. It says without expressing any certainty about the supernatural authenticity of the phenomenon itself, a weeping statue, an apparition of Our Lady, many signs of the action of the Holy Spirit are acknowledged. Like at Champion, people come and go to Mass. They go to confession. Other shrines, they go to confession. So the bishop is encouraged to appreciate the pastoral value and promote the dissemination of the phenomenon, including pilgrimages. There's good spiritual things happening here. That's the first level, Neil Obstad. The second, I'm not quite sure you can say 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, it's just 6. The other one is pray oculis abiatur. Do you know what that means?
I do because it's in front of me here, but I'll let you go ahead.
It's Latin for it looks pretty good, right? Oculis, it looks pretty good. Although important positive signs are recognized, some aspects of confusion or potential risks are also perceived that require the diocesan bishop to engage in a careful discernment and dialogue with the recipients of a given spiritual experience. Mm-hmm. If there were writings or messages, doctrinal clarification might be necessary. All right? Looks pretty good, but there's some questions. Third one is called curator, C-U-R-A-T-U-R. Mm-hmm. Various or significant critical elements are noted, but the phenomenon is already spread widely. I think this would apply to Medjugorje. There have been millions of visitors have gone there. And verifiable spiritual fruits are connected to it. Like I tell people about Medjugorje, I've never been there. I've never felt drawn to go there because I can go to Champion. It's a lot closer, a lot cheaper. And I said, but anyone I know who's gone there has been spiritually helped, and they'll testify to it. There, it says, therefore, a ban that could upset the faithful is not recommended. So there's no ban on going to Medjugorje. Hmm. But the local bishop is advised not to encourage the phenomenon. It'll mature of itself over time, right? It'll mature of itself over time because God can write straight, crooked lines. And the fourth category is called submandato, and that is under a direction or under a commandment. The critical issues are not connected to the phenomenon itself, but to its improper use by people or groups, yep, such as undue financial gain or immoral acts. Yep. The Holy See entrusts the pastoral leadership of the specific place to the diocesan bishop or a delegate. So let's say an apparition of Our Lady took place on private property, and it's actually true, but the only owner of the property is charging you $1,000 to enter, but today only $399 on a credit card, right? So wait a second. That can't be. That's a problem, right? Fourth level is prohibitio de obstruatio. I'm looking for how they're going to translate these into English. Despite various positive elements, the critical issues and risks associated with this phenomena appear to be very serious. The dicastery asks the local bishop to offer a catechesis that can help the faithful understand the reasons for the decision and reorient their legitimate spiritual concerns. I know I'm throwing a lot of words at you. And the final category is declaratio de non supernaturalitate. Mm-hmm. All right, so they're not going to give you a declaration that it is the supernatural, but they could give you a declaration that it is definitely not supernatural. That's interesting. The dicastery for the doctrine of the faith authorizes the local bishop to declare that the phenomenon is found to be not supernatural based on concrete facts and evidence, such as a confession of an alleged visionary or credible testimonies of fabrication of the phenomenon. How about that?
Yeah, well, yeah, here's the other aspect, too, that I think is interesting to look at and maybe to be addressed, too, by your father. You know, apparitions are not necessary, you know, exactly, for our salvation. You know, so maybe we can speak to that for a moment. You know, the head of the dicastery for the doctrine of faith, Cardinal Fernandez, he seemed very concerned that people think that these apparitions are necessary for faith. Maybe you can elucidate that a little bit and unpack that.
Right.
Because there are people that think, oh, no, Fatima's been approved by the church, therefore everything said there's true.
Oh, yes. No, you get these people really hardcore on the Fatima thing. Has the third secret actually been revealed into the Pope, actually consecrate Russia as our Blessed Mother said, and I know what the Blessed Mother said and the Holy Father's been doing. It's like, really? Come on. You know, and then they make a whole business out of it. And then they get a printing empire. And then they get your money, all right? They get the mailing houses going on it. And people can be gullible because they have hope, right? And everybody needs hope, right? And so the church is saying, hey, come on, slow down. Let's take a look at this rationally. I think people, if they're not well catechized or well not informed, they can be susceptible to fraud and the rest. All right. So what's the church looking for? Is it really helping souls? Mm-hmm. Is there union with the church? Is it reinforcing what Jesus taught? You know, so the words of Our Lady at Champion are pretty simple. Gather the children in this area and teach them what they need to know for their salvation. Who can argue with that? Teach them to make the sign of the cross. Who could argue with that? Teach them to approach the sacraments fruitfully. Who could argue with that? Make a general confession. That's always good. Receive Holy Communion. Go, and I'm going to help you. Now, the other part of that apparition we speak about, there might be punishment. That might be a little bit more, you know, come under a greater circumspection, right?
Yeah.
Take it or leave it as you want. But I think it's kind of fascinating how this is all coming down now. And I know there's going to be a lot of ink spilled on this in the weeks and months to come.
Yeah, what was the motive behind it? I mean, the last time that...
I think, you know, I don't want to speculate, but it's in the document. They said, since 1950, this is in the document itself, only six of these reported apparitions have come to a resolution.
Wow.
But there's hundreds of these.
Yeah, right.
And so it was a conundrum. Like, what do we do? What do we do? And I think it's a brilliant solution. He said, you know, from now on, we're not going to judge whether it's supernatural or not. We're just going to say there's nothing about it that's a problem. Or there's four cases where it is a problem and five where it definitely is not supernatural. So I think it's kind of a breakthrough, right? In the past 500 years, there have been only 16 apparitions that have been formally approved. One was Guadalupe, another Fatima, another Lourdes, another Champion. And there's others like Cabejo and La Salette, right, and Akita and things, right, like that. But it's very rare, right? And so I think this is kind of a brilliant breakthrough on the part of the Congregation of Doctrine of Faith, now known as the Dicastery of Doctrine.
Yeah, there's so many. There's a proliferation of these reports right now, and discernment is key. Father, we only have a couple of minutes, as you know. I know you got to run soon. Your rosary tonight, I want to make sure that people get plugged into it. It's one of the great messages that came from Fatima. Our Lady came as Our Lady of the Rosary. And so many of these reported apparitions, that's a re-echoing call. And, of course, that's a Christocentric prayer. How can people join you? Tell us about the fruit of it. And I think it's so critical moment in time.
Right. Yeah. So every night, Maggie and I host the Family Rosary Across America on Rome Radio at 7 p.m. Central Time. You can listen on the radio. You can listen on the app. You can watch it on the app, on the video. You can watch it on our website. You can watch it on various social media platforms. You can call in if you've got a prayer intention. You can send in a prayer intention. The other night, Drew, when we were praying it, I was looking at my Facebook feed, and there was a woman from Pakistan said, "I'm praying the rosary with you." It's at 4:56 a.m. I said, that's awesome. Amazing. And another woman from Ireland said, "I'm praying the rosary with you too. I do it every night at 1 in the morning." And they got people in Hawaii, it's 2 in the afternoon. It's really kind of a global phenomenon. And I tell people, the more people praying the rosary at the same time, the more powerful prayers, right? And it was Our Lady of Fatima, Lourdes, all these places said, pray the rosary. Pray for the rosary for peace in the world. Yeah. Pray for the rosary for the conversion of sinners. It was Mother Teresa, I think, who said, a world at prayer is a world at peace. Wow. Right? A world at prayer is a world at peace. So fascinating stuff going on
good
today.
Stuff.
It's got a lot of reverberation in the secular media, and that's why we're happy to give our take of it here on Relevant Radio.
Hey, just one other thing. The document, I'm sure somebody here at the network is going to be writing on this. Do we have info here if we want to drive people to the Relevant Radio's
this
website?
Weekend, put it up? Yeah, I think we're going to post something today, the document, the little article from Catholic Vatican News. So title of the article is "For Proceeding in the Discernment of Alleged Supernatural Phenomena." The short article from the Vatican itself gives a very concise summary of it. I encourage people to read that. I think we're going to post it on our website and on our Facebook today.
Sounds good. Well, Father, we look forward to praying with you tonight at 7 Central, 8 Eastern, if you want to join Father for the Family Rosary Across America. I know they're going to be tapping you for a lot of media today. I know you've done a lot already. So thank you for what you do. And enjoy your weekend. We'll catch up soon, okay?
Hey, that's great. Thank you, Drew.
Thank you. It's Father Rocky. He's our Chief Executive Officer. Join him every night for the Family Rosary Across America. The rosary is what will bring peace, not just to the country, but to your family. If you want, in fact, it's one of the great, I think it was Pius IX or somebody who said, if you want peace in your family and in your country and in the world, to pray the rosary every night. One of the great popes said that. Important prayer. Look, I've got to take a short pause here. When we come back, we'll talk much more. We'll share a little more of Harrison Bucker's speech with you a little later in the broadcast, and we'll talk. All right? Don't go away. Back right after this.
The Drew Mariani Show. Connected. Connected. Relevant Radio.
Thanks to network sponsor PushPay. PushPay offers parishes a platform for tracking donations and sacraments, overseeing schedules, mobile apps to help manage your administrative load, and much more. Info at relevantradio.com/pushpay. That's relevantradio.com/pushpay.
The Drew Mariani Show is on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, well, thanks for joining me. We've got a lot to talk about. I know somebody who recently went to the dentist, right? They moved. They went to a new dental office. And when they were getting ready to, before they started the procedure, doctor wanted payment up front, right? Normally, you know, you give them your card, they bill you a little bit later, and that happens also in the hospitals. My producer, Tom, in particular, he was sharing with me the other day, he took his son to a doctor's appointment, and instead of just going up to the desk and checking in with a human, he says he ended up going to a bunch of different kiosks where he had to start putting in all the information. He said, okay. So he didn't think much about that. Then he got to the part about the insurance, and he realized, oh, my gosh, I forgot my son's insurance card. So the machine assumed that he was going to pay, and it told him, well, it's going to cost you $450, whatever the amount of dollars was for the visit. It turned out to be less than a five-minute exam, and the machine asked him if he was going to pay or did he want to be billed. That was just an example of what is coming and what's happening in the wider healthcare field. Instead of billing the patient after the doctor's visit or having the surgery or the procedure, you're now being told, hey, you need that knee replacement? You got to pay up front, right? In fact, the Wall Street Journal reported on one woman. Her name was Heather McConey, and she was having, she has 7 weeks to come up with $2,000 to pay for a surgery that her daughter needs to breathe, right? To breathe more easily, really. I shouldn't be too dramatic. But you need to come up with this money, otherwise we're not going to do the surgery. Merritt Island Surgery Center in Merritt Island, Florida, billed her in advance of an adenoid and tonsil surgery. And if she can't pay for the surgery before it's scheduled to take place next month, well, sorry. You can't have it. We're going to put it off. And by the way, her insurance, it won't cover the cost because, well, she has a high deductible and she doesn't have the savings to cover her deductible. So she's now appealing to strangers. She started a GoFundMe campaign to see if she can't raise money for her daughter's surgery. So, do you go to your mechanic and say, you know, you got to pay me first. You know, I'm going to look at your car and we're probably going to put new training in, but here's my pay up front. Well, what if you get the car back and it doesn't drive so great, right? What recourse do you have? Do you have any? On the flip side, because here's the problem with this medical stuff, sometimes the system will overcharge the patient. So what happens if you get overcharged, you know, by the medical company? The Journal reported that Blake Young, another case, right, was being charged $3,600 upfront. He had to get this cardiac screening, and he paid with his health savings account. Then the hospital, CHI Memorial, charged him $2,500 less than that. Well, you know, it took him a long time to get the rest of that money. Thousands of dollars we're talking, right, to get back. So he had to pursue that. Now, I understand hospitals a lot of times don't get paid. They spend forever trying to track down the money that people owe them. The idea for hospitals, of course, it's easier to demand the money up front, and people will somehow come up from it if they need that knee replacement or they need that adenoid surgery or whatever the surgery is, than to have the debt collector go after and try to get the money back for them. And joining me today is Katie Talento. She is Executive Director of the Alliance of Healthcare Sharing Ministries. You can find them at ahcsm.org, and I've invited her to stop by to give us some perspective on this. Hey, Katie, thanks for being here. Good afternoon.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thanks for having me, Drew.
And I could talk so much more about this issue. You see these stories. It's wild to me right now that this is the case. You know, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe this has been slowly moving in this direction. Why are hospitals moving in this direction? And what kind of recourse do patients have, if anything at all?
Well, I think hospitals have largely forgotten their way. They've lost their mission. Most of these hospitals were started by, you know, religious sisters, religious orders 100 years ago, and they've either lost their Catholic identity altogether, or they're, you know, desperately trying to hold on to the reputational advantage it gives them while not still acting very Catholic. I do think that there is a little bit of an opportunity. There's some good news in that when you move to a self-pay economy, the prices get lower. Mm. So just today, I was working with a religious order, a group of nuns that I help sometimes when they have medical issues, and one of them had her surgery canceled because they didn't take her insurance, and they weren't contracted with her insurance. And so, but they said to me, oh, well, if they can pay out of pocket, we'll give you a 75% discount. Wow. And I said, okay, well, they've got $1,000 on their credit limit on their little convent credit card. You know, can they give you that as a deposit? Well, no, it has to be $10,000. You know, so the thing is, though, they could have gotten a much better rate if they did that. And so I think that there is an opportunity for groups and employers, especially, to find ways to access self-pay cash prices and reimburse employees for that. But in the meantime, most people, like the patients and families you were talking about, are just getting pillaged by this approach.
And so what, well, I'm just thinking, okay, I need my knee replaced or whatever the surgery is. And maybe people think, okay, well, that's elective then. What happens if somebody's not able to come up with the money? Do they have to take out a loan? Do they, I guess you forego the procedure? I mean, and what about insurance? How does all this intersect?
Yeah, I mean, they were telling my nun with the need for acute abdominal surgery that was scheduled 4 days ago because of an emergency, that she would just have, they just have to move it. They just have to delay it until she could, I mean, and that's what we were seeing in that story in the Wall Street Journal you were citing. I mean, they don't care. And now, you know, I went back and forth with this hospital and we found a solution and they did come around and they did cut a deal for the sisters. But, you know, that's because they had me. I'm a professional at this.
Right.
Most people don't have it. And it's really scary to any family. And these are giant, powerful bureaucracies and they don't know how to navigate them. And the left hand and right hand within their billing office versus the medical office, it's very difficult. So this is a real problem. I think there's a lot of opportunity for policy reforms in this space.
If you want to join us, I'll open the phones. Feel free to sound off. Maybe you've gone through this. Maybe it's affected you in a negative way. Maybe you see the silver lining in it. The number's 888-914-9149. Katie Talento is joining me today. We're taking a look at hospitals wanting patients to pay up front. When I saw the story, what resonated with me is I'm thinking, you know, there are a lot of people across the economic spectrum. Some people can easily afford this. Some people have got great insurance. Some people don't. But I thought, what is the impact that advanced billing, what's it going to have on health care disparities and access to care for low-income patients? If you don't have the money, are you going to be discriminated against? You're not going to be able to have health care? Are people with money going to get better health care than people without it? I mean, how does this affect low-income patients?
Well, that's always been the case here in America and in any country, honestly. Even countries that have universal government health care, the rich find ways to get the highest quality. And that's always true here in America, unfortunately. And it's exploitative and it's, you know, it's really sad. And I do think that more and more we are seeing that people cannot afford their health care. The prices have skyrocketed. I mean, just skyrocketed. And hospital prices are what are driving the cost of healthcare. I think lots of times big pharma gets blamed, but their prices haven't gone up nearly as much in the past 20 years as hospital prices have. So this is a real problem. The vast majority of hospitals are nonprofit charities, so-called, that are tax exempt. And I think that's the real opportunity for policy reforms. In fact, there was a local city, I believe in Pennsylvania, that sued its local hospitals, its tax-exempt hospitals, for property taxes because they said, you know what, you're profiteering price gougers and you don't deserve this tax exemption anymore. You can't prove that you're actually providing community benefit and not exploiting the poor. And they won. The city won. So it was a really big kind of line in the sand that was drawn there. And I think the federal government and the IRS has a huge role and opportunity here. And it's something that, you know, when I was working in the Trump White House, that it was kind of on my to-do list was to reform the requirements for nonprofit hospitals at the IRS that we never got to. And I really hope that we will next time. I hope that President Trump, the soon-to-be President Trump, will take this under advisement as well, and that he will take the. I mean, this there could not be something that's more important to the little guy than getting screwed over by this healthcare system. Yeah. It's horrible, yeah. And most Americans don't have more than $1,000 in their bank accounts.
That's so true. I'm curious what other countries do. You mentioned other nations. How do these countries handle medical billing and payments? I know a lot of it can be socialized medicine. You may have to wait forever to get that knee replacement or that surgery. But are there lessons that U.S. healthcare can learn from other nations?
Yeah, there really are. I mean, you're right that, you know, I think we, especially those of us who appreciate the free market and the capitalist system in America, we kind of look down on these socialized systems in other countries. And truly, it's every other country except America has decided to do it this way for all the reasons you and I are describing. But they have their own downsides, right? So the upside of that kind of system is they have great primary care usually. You can get in to see your government primary care doctor pretty quickly. They can treat most things and manage a lot of things, but it is the specialty care that where the sacrifices come in. And the way they handle those costs and the overburdened demand is they just ration care. They delay your surgeries. You can't get in it, or they deny you outright. And so especially if, you know, maybe the surgery doesn't have 100% chance of working, or maybe the new drug is there, they want you to use the old drug. So it's, there are problems on this end. So I think about the surgeries we're talking about in the Wall Street Journal and the nun case that I gave. These are surgeries that would have just been delayed for much longer in other countries than they have been here in America. So there's trade-offs.
Well, let's do this. We'll grab a few telephone calls. If you want to join us, I only have her for a few moments. 888-914-9149. 888-914-9149. And I'll go to the phones in just a quick segment for you as call screeners are now screening your calls. Katie, if people want more information on this, are you writing about it or what do you offer?
Yeah, I mean, I represent the healthcare sharing ministries, and we are often in the situation of helping our members interact with hospitals and deal with hospitals as cash pay patients. That's actually what a lot of what we do, and helping them to negotiate lower prices. So you can reach out to us at the Alliance of Healthcare Sharing Ministries website. That's ahcsm.org. I also work with people at All Better Health, that's allbetter.health. So there are advocates out there that can help you. Usually you have to pay them. So it's really tough out there. This is a bad situation. I think it's important that when we talk to policymakers and you call your members of Congress to complain about things like this, that we ask for the nonprofit rules to take over. Not that we want the government to set prices or interfere, but we want the market to work and we want the incentives here. We're all paying property taxes. We're all paying income taxes. And if these charities are not really charitable, then they need to as well.
How will the administrations handle this differently? I mean, if Biden gets four more years or if Trump gets in, how does that affect healthcare?
Oh my gosh, this is a big question. So I think if President Biden remains in office, we're going to see more of the same when it comes to his policy agenda, which lowering prices for patients, as much as, you know, you think about that as being a high priority for Democrat presidents, in fact, it has not been the case. It's been totally focused on the cultural battles. Just this week, he put out a rule talking about how Catholic hospitals and religious doctors and hospitals have to actually pay for abortions and cut the breasts off little girls. You know, that's what they're focused on is their cultural agenda 100% of the time. So I think that's what they're going to focus on for the next 4 years if he were reelected. And so I know that President Trump will be trying to reverse some of those sort of cultural issues, but he will also be focused on some populist approaches like price transparency in healthcare. That was one of our big policy wins, is pushing through price transparency rules for hospitals and for insurers so that we can start to try to create some price competition in this market, which has been so shielded from it because of our third-party insurer system. So we would probably double down on that, increase fines for noncompliance. I have to imagine that this IRS issue is something that would resonate with President Trump. It's really only fair if you're going to exempt people from taxes for charities that they actually do charitable things and they don't gouge and exploit the poor. So I think you will see some of that. I know that Senator Grassley from Iowa, who is the chairman of the Finance Committee in the Senate, this is his big issue. He was the one that actually got a lot of hospital financial assistance rules in place. So I'd love to see him get more engaged in that and re-upping and modernizing those criteria.
All right. Well, let's grab a call or two. I know I have a few minutes here. Michelle is in Minnesota. Mm-hmm. Michelle, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I was just thinking, you know, this universal health care that the Obama administration came under, I have just seen this didn't work for most people.
Yeah.
I think we were sold a bit of goods that just ruined our health care. And now, you know, it just kind of seems like this is the push that they need, this craziness to get us to a universal health care like Europe and Canada. And it's not good. You know, I live in a state and I work in the medical and I see who is getting major medical paid for. Wow. And it isn't the sisters. It isn't your elderly. You know, it's people coming from other countries that literally had these problems before they came to America.
Right.
But we, the taxpayers, are forking their bills over.
Mm-hmm. So, all right, Michelle, let me hold you on that because I have a moment or two. Let me let Katie respond to that. Go right ahead, Katie.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're talking about the immigration system, and you're absolutely right. You know, it used to be that when you, well, and still is, that when you're immigrating legally, you're required to talk about your pre-existing conditions. We don't want you to end up as a public charge. That's the phrase we use, a public charge, like a burden on our welfare system, including our medical safety net programs.
Yeah.
But when you have a mass immigration from people who are not going through that legal system, then you miss out on the opportunity to sort of screen out people who are going to become dependent on those safety net programs. And that's why we're seeing, especially in the border states, just a mass overwhelm of those systems. But it's a real problem. You're right.
Katie, I only have a minute or two left. Let me put a plug in for your organization as well. Why don't you tell everyone about Alliance of Healthcare Sharing Ministries, how it works, how people can follow you and get in touch.
Absolutely. So we represent the larger nationwide healthcare sharing ministries. These people are religious people who come together to share their medical bills in a non-insurance way. So it's kind of an alternative out there. And we just sued the state of California. I'm sorry, not California, of Colorado, actually, to protect our religious liberty. They're trying to shut us down or if we don't give them a bunch of data. So, yeah, we're here to provide people an alternative, people of faith. So check us out, AHCSM.org.
Right. Thank you so much for being with me. Keep up your work, okay?
Thank you. Appreciate it.
It's Katie Talento. I need to take a very short break here, and I'll be back right after this. Hey, if you have real estate or land that you no longer need, well, consider the advantages of donating it to Relevant Radio. The process is easy, and the tax advantages can be huge. Learn more at relevantradio.com/property.
For the ladies present today, congratulations on an amazing accomplishment. You should be proud of all that you have achieved to this point in your young lives. I want to speak directly to you briefly because I think it is you, the women, who have had the most diabolical lies told to you. How many of you are sitting here now about to cross this stage and are thinking about all the...
So that's Harrison Butker, part of his speech. I want to play a little bit more of it for you. We spoke about it a little bit earlier today. If you missed the conversation, right after the chaplet in our 3 o'clock central hour, 4 Eastern, you can go back and listen to some of the things that he said. We unpacked it for you, and I thought, you know, it deserves a little bit more air. He is an NFL kicker, plays for the Kansas City Chiefs, a devout Catholic, wears a scapular. He spoke at Benedictine College. This is a truly Catholic institution in Kansas. And his speech has made waves. And I'll tell you this, and I was a little skeptical at first. I thought, well, what could he say? It was really that, you know, it got that kind of reaction. It was powerful. I had a chance to listen to it. He boldly addressed so many of the different societal issues that call out bad Catholics, right? And call out the current president. He even pointed the finger at the church. He went ahead and talked about controversial topics like abortion and IVF and birth control and surrogacy and euthanasia and cohabitation and COVID lockdowns and radical feminism and gender ideology, all this in 20 minutes, right? It's pretty amazing. I thought maybe I'll play a little bit more for you. He has gotten so much heat. And in fact, this speech to a bunch of Catholics at a Catholic university has got, you know, television networks and shows like The View chirping about it. Social media, he's getting flamed. He's been doxxed. People, you know, saying, hey, here's where he lives. I just want to commend him. He focused on the Catholic Church and how Catholics should truly live and how they should navigate what is a toxic culture. Here's a little bit more of Harrison Butker.
Not unique. Bad policies and poor leadership have negatively impacted major life issues. Things like abortion, IVF, surrogacy, euthanasia, as well as a growing support for degenerate cultural values and media, all stem from the pervasiveness of disorder. Our own nation is led by a man who publicly and proudly proclaims his Catholic faith, but at the same time is delusional enough to make the sign of the cross during a pro-abortion rally. He has been so vocal in his support for the murder of innocent babies that I'm sure to many people, it appears that you can be both Catholic and pro-choice. He is not alone. From the man behind the COVID lockdowns to the people pushing dangerous gender ideologies onto the youth of America, they all have a glaring thing in common. They are Catholic. This is an important reminder that being Catholic alone doesn't cut it. These are the sorts of things we are told in polite society to not bring up. You know, the difficult and unpleasant things. But if we are going to be men and women for this time in history, we need to stop pretending that the Church of Nice is a winning proposition. We must always speak and act in charity, but never mistake charity for cowardice. It is safe to say that over the past few years, I've gained quite the reputation for speaking my mind. I never envisioned myself nor wanted to have this sort of a platform, but God has given it to me, so I have no other choice but to embrace it and preach more hard truths about accepting your lane and staying in it. As members of the church founded by Jesus Christ, it is our duty and ultimately privilege to be authentically and unapologetically Catholic. Don't be mistaken, even within the church, people in polite Catholic circles will try to persuade you to remain silent. There even was an award-winning film called Silence, made by a fellow Catholic, wherein one of the main characters, a Jesuit priest, abandoned the church, and as an apostate, when he died, is seen grasping a crucifix, quiet and unknown to anyone but God. As a friend of Benedictine College, His Excellency Bishop Robert Barron said in his review of the film, it was exactly what the cultural elite want to see in Christianity, private, hidden away, and harmless. Our Catholic faith has always been countercultural. Our Lord, along with countless followers, were all put to death for their adherence to her teachings. The world around us says that we should keep our beliefs to ourselves whenever they go against the tyranny of diversity, equity, and inclusion. We fear speaking truth because now, unfortunately, truth is in the minority. Congress just passed a bill where stating something as basic as the biblical teaching of who killed Jesus could land you in jail. But make no mistake, before we even attempt to fix any of the issues plaguing society, we must first get our own house in order, and it starts with our leaders. The bishops and priests appointed by God as our spiritual fathers must be rightly ordered. There is not enough time today for me to list all the stories of priests and bishops misleading their flocks, but none of us can blame ignorance anymore and just blindly proclaim that that's what Father said.
That's Harrison Butker there, part of his speech, and you can listen to it there. There was one other element in there, and I want to circle back to something he said about that piece of legislation, but I want to make sure I get this other piece of audio in. Maggie, you and I were just talking about the rate of cohabitation and how high it has become, so many people living together. There was one section there you thought really should be played.
On from this place and enter into the world, know that you will face many challenges. Sadly, I'm sure many of you know of the countless stories of good and active members of this community who, after graduation and moving away from the Benedictine bubble, have ended up moving in with their boyfriend or girlfriend prior to marriage. Some even leave the church and abandon God. It is always heartbreaking to hear these stories, and there is a desire to know what happened and what went wrong. What you must remember is that life is about doing the small things well, setting yourself up for success, and surrounding yourself with people who continually push you to be the best version of you. I say this all the time, that iron sharpens iron. It's a great reminder that those closest to us should be making us better. If you are dating someone who doesn't even share your faith, how do you expect that person to help you become a saint? If your friend group is filled with people who only think about what you're doing next weekend and are not willing to have those difficult conversations, how can they help sharpen you? As you prepare to enter into the workforce, it is extremely important that you actually think about the places you are moving to. Who is the bishop? What kind of parishes are there? Do they offer the TLM and have priests who embrace their priestly vocation? Cost of living must not be the only arbiter of your choices.
All right, it goes on and on. I think you're going to hear a lot about it. The internet's on fire with all of that. I want to circle back to something I just heard. I didn't hear it before, but he talked about the piece of legislation that's being passed. You know, the Catholic Church, when it comes to our Jewish brothers and sisters, they're firm about not blaming the Jews for the death of Christ. And I want to be clear, I don't know where he stands on that, but this teaching is rooted both in historical context and theological understanding. The Second Vatican Council came out with a document, and it's perhaps the most significant and authoritative statement on the topic. And, you know, if you want to learn a little bit more about that or you're confused about it, just read that. It states that what happened in his passion cannot be charged against all Jews without distinction, then alive, nor against Jews today. And the church's teaching on that is pretty clear. Christ's death, they teach, is a result of the sins of all humanity. Your sin and my sin, not just one particular group. Joe in San Francisco, I got less than a minute. I'll give you the final thought.
Oh, Drew, he was mentioning about homemakers, and I'm talking about most of these people are home breakers. They don't want family. They don't want unity. All they are, they should be looking at their own lives. All their lives are about anger and racism and hatred and jealous and jealousy and envy. All Drew is.
You're breaking up a little bit, Joe. I mean, your cell phone's coming in and out. I'm grateful for your call, but I'm out of time anyway. Cale Clark's coming straight up. Stay tuned for him. And I'll be back again soon. If you missed any of our conversation, go to relevantradio.com and you can download it there or where podcasts are found. Please tell others about the program, and I'll be back again soon to give you another look at life you won't find anywhere else. Thanks for being here today. I'll pray for you. Say a prayer for me, and have a great week.